Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome to House New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. Tonight, as our guest, we're welcoming Al Fazio to discuss the role of the broker for both the buyer and the seller and the rules that they have to follow. Please stay tuned for Bob.
The Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn. Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.
Welcome, everyone, to House New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe, and we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. We're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyearbyen, Norway, to Ushuaia, Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Block Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. We have as our guest tonight Alfred Fazio. Al is a named partner in the Manhattan law firm of Caputa Fazio Giacoya. And the topic tonight is brokers, real estate brokers, and their relationship to each other and to buyers and sellers. And we have none other than the expert on this topic, Al Fazio. Welcome, Al, to our show.
Bob, you do me too much justice. Thank you. It's nice to be here with you.
You are the expert in this area. Al, first tell us a little about your practice and your firm, and then we'll jump into the topic of broker relationships. Sounds very sexy, but I'm sure we'll debunk that very quickly.
Sure, Bob. Well, I am an attorney and a partner in a firm in Manhattan downtown, the Caputa Fazio Giacoya. We're located at 90 Broad Street, downtown Manhattan. I am very active in the Brooklyn and Staten Island market as well, doing real estate transactions, the buying, the selling, commercial leasing. I get involved with the commercial litigation, and my firm, especially me, is very involved with real estate brokerage issues as they affect the consumer, as they affect the brokerage industry, and it's that topic that I think we're going to talk about tonight.
Yes, we are. It's a very untalked about, if that's the correct word, undiscussed, unthought about, if those are still all words, topic when people buy and sell homes. You have the seller. The seller's excited about trying to get as many zeros after their purchase price as possible, particularly in the hot market of Brooklyn and Manhattan, where we both practice. The buyer, on the other hand, is so excited they're buying maybe their first house, having some kids come along. They love the kitchen. They love the man cave. They love the block. They love everything. And the person in the middle, the real estate broker, is the person facilitating this exchange. And people's emotions sort of overwhelm the fact that the broker plays a very critical, important, and fiduciary role between them, but it's often overlooked or not even mentioned. So that's why we thought maybe tonight we would talk about the relationship of the broker to both parties. So take us through it for a moment. I want to sell my house, and I engage a real estate broker, and probably I'm doing it more by the seat of my pants than by any sort of research. I may have been recommended to somebody. Somebody may be known as a hot broker in the community. I reach out to that person, whether it's a woman or a man, and say, sell my house. And that broker says, I'm going to get as much money for you as possible. But tell us some of the things that are in the background that no one really ever discusses or thinks about.
Well, first and foremost, Bob, I think it's important that you retain the services of a real estate professional. And I use that term very specifically, someone who has experience in the market. You know, with the advent of social media, many consumers today think it's just as simple as going on the computer, going on some sites, maybe Zillow, Trulia, that are available, and looking at their property or looking at properties in a particular area, what they think it might be worth. And in a lot of cases, those sites are not up to date. They are not current in the information that they have. In many cases, it might not be accurate information. So when you retain the services of a real estate professional, this person is licensed by the state of New York. The state of New York has determined that to be a real estate agent, it's important enough that a license be issued so that if that person or if that firm is not doing what, in fact, they're supposed to be doing, their license could be taken from them. They have the ability to hold money in some jurisdictions, maybe not in our area, New York City, but upstate New York. The real estate broker holds deposits on contracts. Here, we, the attorneys, do that. So if you're talking about people who have the authority to hold substantial sums of money, that's an important part of the licensing procedure, and New York State wants to know that they're the right party for the job. We also recommend, or in many cases, that when you're looking for a real estate professional, you hire someone who is a member of an organization that is guided by a code of ethics, a professional code of some kind. For example, a realtor, someone who's a member of a board of realtors, the Brooklyn Board of Realtors, the Manhattan Board of Realtors. There's another organization that's called REBNY, the Real Estate Board of New York. That's also a professional organization that's guided by a professional code of ethics as well. You want to make sure that the person you're hiring is in fact licensed with the state. You can contact New York State. You could find out if the person's license is active. You could make sure that there aren't any blemishes against their record. Sometimes people respond to advertisements. and the people in these advertisements may not be who they say they are. So first and foremost, it's really doing your homework to make sure the person you're hiring is the professional that you're going to need to do the job.
And Al, what about someone who does it who is not licensed? I guess there are people like that. What is are there pitfalls of hiring a person who says, "Look, I know the house down the street is for sale. If you'd like, I'll make an offer on your behalf." And that are those people allowed to sell property and or collect commissions?
No, they're not. In fact, in New York State. The licensing activity of a real estate broker or agent requires them to the negotiation of the transaction, the searching for property, the ability to act. You mentioned a word at the start of the program, a fiduciary. Someone who's a fiduciary is a person in a position of trust and authority. There are certain fiduciary obligations that an agent, a licensee, would owe to the consumer. In fact, there are six of them. It's obedience, loyalty, disclosure, confidentiality, accountability, reasonable care. These are all things that a licensed agent would owe to the fiduciary who they're representing. Someone who's not licensed doesn't have that ability. Someone who's not licensed is not authorized to do the things that a real estate agent can do.
And who typically hires a broker? Seller, buyer, both? Do they use one? Do they use two? How does that process
start? That's a really good question. That's a really good question, Bob, because what's happened in the recent past is there's been the advent of something called buyer agency. For many, many years, going back, and you and I have been doing this for more years than we could count, in that transaction, in most transactions in the past, real estate agents represented the sellers in the transaction, both the one who was retained by the seller and the one who might have brought the buyer in. Today, they actually have buyer's agents, people who act as fiduciaries on behalf of the buyer, the ones who can negotiate on behalf of the buyer. If I were a buyer and I were working with a real estate agent, you would imagine that you'd want someone working for your best interest, not in the best interest of the seller or the person whose property you're looking to buy. So we always would recommend to a buyer when they're looking in the market, make sure that you're working with someone who is acting as your fiduciary, acting as your agent. And New York State, by the way, thinks this is so important that all real estate agents in every residential transaction for a 1-to-4 family house, every condominium, every co-op, a real estate agent is required to have the seller and the buyer sign a document that indicates that they're aware that this particular agent is representing them or is not representing them. So in a case where the seller will give the listing to a real estate broker, the agent will take out this agency disclosure form, that's what it's called, and would have the seller sign it indicating that the agent is representing the seller and only the seller. The buyer who goes to a broker to look for property, that broker, that agent would also have the buyer sign a document that will say that the agent is either representing the buyer or is working on behalf of the seller. So it's important that the buyer know who they're working with when they go into the transaction, because as you may imagine, a buyer looking to buy property who doesn't understand that process might be giving all this confidential information to the agent, who's then going to turn around and give it to the seller, because that's who they represent. You want to make sure that the agent you're retaining represents your interest and will be confidential. Keep that information confidential when you give it to them.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a confusing area for purchasers who contact a broker either passing by a real estate window, going on Trulia or Zillow and contacting whoever his name is on the listing. And, of course, that broker will then usually pick these folks up, drive them over the property, walk around the house. Isn't this great? Look at how big these rooms are. This would be great for your kids. And the buyer probably falls into this false sense of security that, hey, this is my friend, this person's working for me, when really they're not. And fortunately, you did point out that realtors have an ethical responsibility, so they would probably not go out of their way to hurt a purchaser, but certainly at the end of the day, their loyalty lies with the seller, not with the purchaser. But I'm sure that's very confusing for a lot of buyers, thinking that the broker is their broker also, when really the broker is the advocate for the seller.
I think the best example I can give you would be when a buyer responds to an advertisement and maybe going to an open house on a Saturday or a Sunday. When they walk in, there's usually an agent sitting there giving information to that buyer about the property. The common misconception would be that that agent would be working in the best interest of the buyer, when in fact that is clearly going to be the listing agent in the transaction. They're not going to be the acting on behalf of the buyer. You'll very rarely see a buyer agency situation where a buyer walks into an open house. However, the fact that a buyer goes to an open house does not prevent the buyer from then going out and retaining the services of an agent to help negotiate that particular property to their best interests. The fact that they go into a property, they look at it, they determine what purchase price they may be offering, the particulars of the property, what school district it's in, the taxes, and so on. They then have the right, if they want to go out and retain a broker to help them and assist them in negotiating the transaction. The next question you might ask is, well, who pays for that?
Right. It gets a little sticky, I would imagine, where the listing broker says, hey, I'm hosting this. I advertise this. You came on your own. Now you're coming back with someone else and you're going to tell us who pays for what, Al.
Well, in a normal situation, if you're going into a property that happens to be part of what's called a multiple listing service, that is a situation where the seller retains the brokerage firm. The firm then puts the property onto a service called the multiple listing service, where it then is distributed to all different firms who belong to that same organization. In Brooklyn, there's a multiple listing service. In Manhattan, most of New York City, the counties have their own multiple listing services. The agents, the firms that belong to that service, agree to co-broke their listings, meaning that when the seller puts a listing on the MLS and they give it to a listing broker, that listing broker will then indicate to the other brokers what money they will pay them, what percentage of the commission those other brokers would get. So in those cases, the seller is always paying the commission. When you walk in and you're dealing with a broker who's a member of the MLS and that property is listed on the multiple listing service, it would 99% of the time be a situation where the seller is paying the commission and the broker does not, the buyer is not paying it. If you retain a broker who's not a member of the MLS and you want them to go in and negotiate that house that you might have seen advertised or you might have seen in an open house, the listing broker is not obligated to co-broke with that particular firm because they're not a member of the same service. In many cases, they will, but they may not give them the same commission split or part of the commission that they might be giving someone on the MLS. And in those instances, if that were the case, in some limited cases, the broker may be asking the buyer to pay some additional money in order to negotiate the deal. But that's far and few between. We don't see that very much in our jurisdiction, Bob.
And also take us in the example, the more typical example, the seller retains their own broker. What are some of the things that the broker then does vis-a-vis the seller in terms of contracts, disclosures, and things of that nature? What are they required to do?
Sure. Let's take a seller, for example. When a seller retains a broker to sell the property, the broker will be asking the seller to sign. They'll try to get them to sign, and they'll want them to sign what's called an exclusive listing agreement. And that exclusive agreement does exactly what it means. The seller is exclusively listing the property with that particular brokerage firm for a period of time. In many cases, it's 6 months. It could be less. It could be more. It depends on how you negotiate the transaction. This listing contract, Bob, basically says that the seller agrees that this particular broker will be the only broker, or with the assistance of a broker on the MLS, to sell the property. If the seller were to sell the property on his own, or if the seller were to retain another broker who's not a member of the multiple listing service to sell the property, the listing broker would still be entitled to the commission, even if the seller paid another broker a full commission on the transaction. The broker that took the listing, that had that contract signed by the seller, would have the right to collect a full commission from the seller. So that's a very important document that the sellers need to read. And in many cases, we encourage the sellers to discuss the format with their agent, because in some cases, you might have a seller who was working with a neighbor or somebody from across the street who might have been interested in the property, but then that person decided not to go forward and make the purchase. Well, when the seller then puts the property and gives it to the broker and it's listed, that particular neighbor might come back and want to buy the property. So we encourage sellers to put into their agreements, if they were negotiating with anyone prior to having signed the exclusive agreement with the broker, we encourage them to put the names of those people in that listing contract as an exclusion to the contract, so that if the neighbor comes back a month after the seller signed the listing contract, that commission may not be paid to the seller because this was someone who they dealt with in advance. So that listing contract would be the most important document that the seller signs with the real estate broker, because it's a contractual obligation. It determines the term of the listing, how many months they will hold it. It determines the amount of the commission to be paid to the listing broker. It determines the amount of the commission the listing broker will split with another broker who's a member of the multiple listing service. It will state the listing price, the price that the broker and the seller agree to put on the property when it is advertised for sale. That is why you would want to hire a professional, someone who is licensed and who is known in the marketplace and knows the properties well, so that listing price is at a number that is high enough so that it's not something that's out of reach. It's based on comparables, that other properties that were sold in the area, and these are things that the listing broker will provide to the seller, showing the seller that other properties that are similar to yours, what they've sold for in the recent past, you can then determine, based on the age of your house, the personal property items that you have in it, the improvements you made to the property, what pricing you want to put it at so that when it goes in the market, it's priced right to sell. That listing contract would contain all of that. In addition, we talked about this agency disclosure form that's required. That would be signed so that the seller would acknowledge that the agent works for the seller and that the broker is acting as the fiduciary on behalf of the seller. There's a lead paint disclosure form that's signed as well. That's a federal required document that the seller would indicate whether the seller is aware of any lead paint hazards that might be in the property. And if the seller is aware of anything to that extent, they have to disclose it on a form that's going to then be given to the buyer who would want to negotiate that particular property. So you have the listing contract, Bob. You have the agency disclosure form. You have the lead paint disclosure form. And if the broker is a member of the multiple listing service, there'll be other forms that would have to be signed as far as privacy rights, if they want their phone number to be displayed or disclosed to other brokers, documents like that, that would be explained by the listing agent.
And now two questions from your discussion. One is the example you gave of the neighbor who was looking at the house before. Hopefully, that would be excluded. That person would be excluded in the contract in the event that the neighbor did end up buying the property. But let's take the other end of that type of example, where a broker has shown someone the property, say 5 months into the listing agreement. It's a 6-month agreement, and the seller and the buyer say, "Hey, why don't we wait another month?" And the broker will not be entitled to a commission. So discuss that for a moment, where the parties attempt to close outside of this listing agreement period and, escape having to pay a commission.
Well, the listing contract, again, is going to indicate, and one thing we didn't discuss is at what point is the broker entitled to a commission? And this is something that I think the consumers don't really understand properly. The standard listing contract says that a commission would be due and owing the broker at the time that the broker has brought about a meeting of the minds between the buyer and the seller, and when the broker produces a buyer who is ready, willing, and financially able to buy. Now, let's take the normal situation where a buyer comes in, negotiates the deal is set, a contract of sale is sent out, it's signed by both the buyer and the seller. For all intents and purposes, the real estate broker may be entitled to a commission even if the deal does not close, because the listing contract said it wasn't required to be paid if a closing takes place. It's required to be paid when the broker brought about a meeting of the minds. The seller has a right to request of the broker or the agent who's working with them to put into that listing contract a statement that says that the commission would only be paid if the transaction closes, because that's what most consumers would think, that when the deal closes, that's when the commission would be paid. And it's a very complicated part of the agreement. It's something that I believe consumers really are not made well aware of, but I do think they have the right to indicate to their agent their concern about that, and the agent would then incorporate it to the contract. Going back to your question as to what happens in a case where a buyer and a seller get together and say, it's 5 months into the listing, there's a 6-month listing, you could wait a month and then come back to see me. The listing contract says that if a buyer was introduced to the property during the term of the listing and buys it potentially some months after the listing, you have to look very closely at the listing contract. If the listing contract has a protection clause, it may say that that listing contract is still in effect 60, 30, 90 days even after it terminates. if someone looked at the property during the term of the listing. So the seller should be asking the agent if there's a protection period in that listing contract, and that's negotiable, whether or not there should be one or not. And maybe the seller would not want to have one. When the listing expires in 6 months, it terminates. And if the seller goes out and finds a new buyer 2 days later, they have the perfect right to negotiate without having to pay a broker a commission. But if that buyer was introduced to the property during the term of the listing, it may very well be the case that if the buyer buys after the listing contract terminates, a commission may still be payable to the broker. That's what you have to be careful of when you look at that contract.
So you really can't outsmart the broker by or cut out the broker by waiting for that 7th month to arrive, provided that this person did see the property within the 6 month period.
Yeah, I mean, it's a question. That's something that attorneys make a living on, is to litigate issues like that. Maybe a broker might claim the buyer did come in during the 6 months. The seller would claim they didn't come in during the 6 months. But clearly, your listing contract is specific. It does say if the person was introduced during the term of the listing, then the broker may very well be entitled to a commission. So you're right. You may not be able to outsmart the broker, and you might be the subject of litigation or arbitration, and that's not something that you want to get yourself involved with.
And actually, Al, correct me if I'm wrong, many of these agreements are signed before an attorney is even involved in the process. Isn't that correct, and how would you handle something like that?
Well, I'll tell you that you and I both do transactional real estate. It's very rare that we get involved in a real estate transaction until the buyer and the seller have really met. There is a meeting of the minds. You know, in most cases, the seller might contact you, the buyer contacts me and says, we've reached an agreement, we're ready to go to contract. Now, that's months and months after the seller had signed this listing contract with the real estate broker. It's not often that those contracts are reviewed by attorneys. They're pretty standard in the industry, but certainly every consumer has the right to have any document that they're signing reviewed by an attorney. You know, there's this other misconception in the marketplace that if a document, a contract is signed, the consumer has a certain number of days to get out of it. That's not the case in the real estate market. You have to be careful, at least in New York City, in the downstate region where we deal, the five boroughs of New York, Westchester, Long Island. You know, the attorneys prepare the contracts, the listing contract that's signed between the broker and the seller. Once that contract is signed, it's a contract. There is no right of rescission to it. So the consumer should understand when they put pen to paper, they have to ask themselves, are they doing this with appropriate legal understanding of the terms and conditions? And if not, they should contact an attorney to check with them. On a rare occasion, I'll get a phone call from someone to ask me to take a look at it. It's not often, and it should be done more often.
But as you point out, many times we don't see that information until months down the line when there are actually active buyers looking to get into a contract. But Al,
That's true.
Yeah.
No, I was going to say that in many cases sellers call us when they're unhappy about a situation and they've already committed to a contract, and in some cases they're not happy with the broker. They're not happy with the advertising. They're not happy with the way it's being marketed. You know, I will always say to a seller, the most important aspect, part of the real estate transaction is, as far as the marketing is concerned, knowing where is your property going to be marketed? How is it going to be marketed? At what price is it going to be marketed? Today with social media, there's something called syndication. When a real estate broker takes a listing, the seller should be asking the broker, where is my listing going? What sites will it be on? How much exposure will it have? And we've seen situations now, and I could tell you that's recently I've gotten calls where sellers have put their listings with a broker. It goes on to social media. It doesn't come off. It stays there. You know, we talk about things that are on social media that stay there forever. Buyers who buy property find out months after they've bought it that the entire inside of their home, the interior of their home, room by room, is showing up on the internet for everyone to see, where the windows are, where the doors are, where the entranceways are. And in some cases, the buyers aren't too happy about having the home that they just purchased available for the world to see. So we've seen recently in some cases where buyers are contacting the agents, contacting the services and saying, get my property off these sites. It's not a very easy thing to do.
Yes. So on the one hand, you're saying to the broker, advertise the heck out of it. And then at some point, the buyer's saying, get me off the internet, which we both know it's easier to get on the internet than to get off the internet.
That's correct.
How about talk for we just talked, you actually answered my question without me asking it, disputes between brokers and sellers. Let's talk about disputes between brokers. How are they resolved? Brokers who say, no, I sold it, you know, I deserve it. No, you deserve it. How are disputes between brokers solved?
Well, the advantages of using a broker that is a member of a professional organization, I had mentioned earlier, a realtor, for example, the Board of Realtors, or in Manhattan, the Real Estate Board of New York, these organizations have mechanisms for the brokers to resolve their disputes by arbitration. So that if brokerage A, for example, brought a buyer in and is involved in the contract of sale and is the alleged procuring cause of the transaction, if broker B says, no, I introduced this property to the buyer, I was the one that brought this buyer in, and I'm the one that's entitled to a commission, if in fact those brokers, those agents in that firm are members of a realtor organization or the Real Estate Board of New York, they have an internal mechanism for arbitration to arbitrate their disputes, and the organization itself will make the determination as to how that commission should be paid or split up. In cases where you don't use someone who's a member of that type of organization, it may be the situation where the broker goes after the seller and sues the seller, either in arbitration or through litigation, and that's not a very comfortable position to be in. So, you know, it certainly behooves the consumer to do their homework to make sure that who they're working with, the firm they're working with, is a member of a professional organization that has that recourse.
Al, are there any parting words that you want to leave our audience in terms of information or tips in hiring, dealing, or working with brokers?
You know, Bob, I was privileged to be interviewed by CBS, and I'm told that this month in February it's supposed to be on Channel 2. They're doing some program concerning real estate brokerage and potential fraud in the industry, what the consumers need to be concerned about when they respond to advertisements by real estate brokers. And basically during the interview I said what I had said to you. Really, the consumer needs to do their homework. There's some due diligence that both the buyer and the seller need to do. Check out the broker. Make sure that the firm is licensed, that the agent is licensed. See if they're members of a professional organization. Find out their experience in what they're doing. Talk to a professional. Hire an attorney before they sign any documentation to review it to make sure that what they're doing is appropriate. The more work that you do at the beginning will give you a great deal of satisfaction at the end. That's the best advice I can give to anyone.
Well, that's great advice, and you were a great guest, Al, very knowledgeable. And we talked about an area that's many times not talked about. It only pops up when there are problems, but As you point out, there are multiple areas that the consumer should be aware of, and all of the responsibilities that a broker does have, a licensed broker does have towards their client. Very interesting but overlooked area of a real estate transaction, unless something goes wrong.
Bob, I want to thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to you. I appreciate it.
And we look forward to seeing you on TV, Al. Thank you.
I always do. Thanks a lot, Bob.
Take care. Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to our guest, Al Fazio. Al is a named partner in the law firm of Caputa, Fazio, and Giacoya, and among other things, they do a lot of real estate work, and Al, we were fortunate to have him share his thoughts on, the interactions of real estate brokers with their clients, both sellers and buyers, among themselves, and all the things that we should look out for when we're ready to either buy or sell a house. This is House New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.